This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Jeremy Thompson, artist, musician, and founder of Templeton's. Welcome, Jeremy.
Happy to be with you, Ava.
Jeremy, tell us the story of Templeton's, how it got started, and what you hope to achieve here.
Maybe it was the spring of 2019? I guess it was. COVID hit, and it was time for us to reevaluate what we were doing at our previous location, which was the Irvis, and that was just due east of the Rock and Roll Speedway on the corner of Broadway and Campbell. And we had a little gallery, vintage, Emporium, silkscreen print shop, which is still located there. Yeah, right. And then also Sport Press. And then COVID hit. And it looked like that was a good time for us to evaluate our use of space there or if it was time for us to relocate. So we were really fortunate to have stumbled on an opportunity at the Labor Temple downtown on Stone. We've done a little soft opening preview here and there and started some Friday, Saturday hours, and our official opening will be the weekend of September 17th.
The Labor Temple is a large building, historic building, on Stone, downtown, across the street from the police station, and then next door to the police station is Mocha, and kind of kitty quarter from the Labor Temple is the mortuary. Can you tell us a little bit about that building? Why is it called the Labor Temple?
So the Labor Temple was named that, as I understand it, sometime back in the 20s or 30s. The building had originally been a car dealership of all things. And then after a few different ownership changes, it became a meeting hall for labor unions. And so it was christened the Labor Temple. There's a famous Dorothea Lange black and white photograph of it during that time period. And so from there, I think it continued to have an event space. At the time it was for wrestling and boxing. And eventually it came into the possession of a family trust that's been operating it since. And they have really dedicated themselves to maintaining the space as an artist use space. I've been really inspired by some of the other tenants here, and I would love to share with your audience who else is here at the Labor Temple. You did a great job geographically placing it. I would also say we're right down the street from the Clifton and right next door to the Arizona Theater Company and right around the corner from Owls Club and the Tucson Children's Museum and right down the street from Five Points. So
Jeremy, when people walk up to the door, there's this beautiful old wooden door, and you kind of, I feel like, have no idea what you're going to see when you open the door. Could you describe it to us? As you walk into Templeton's, what is it like in there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, so it's interesting to be in a retail space that doesn't have that classic retail view or the picture window to share with passers-by what you're doing inside. So there is a bit of a mystery. We're also right next door to Labor Temple Tattoo, which was founded by Haji, who worked for 15 years, I think, down at Red Sky on 4th Avenue. He has an amazing studio. He's moved in the last few months. And so he's the other wood door. So we're Studio A and he's Studio G. And often we get people who are looking for each one of us. And their experience on walking into both locations is, wow, I had no idea this was in here. Haji has done an amazing job with his decor next door. And we were just talking with each other the other day saying, isn't it interesting that we both ended up here during this time? Because we have so many things in common about our aesthetics and we'll be collaborating on different approaches. But when you walk into Templeton's, I think what you'd find is the one and only vintage emporium / gallery space in all of downtown Tucson. You'd be confronted with many large-scale colorful paintings and prints and mid-century modern furniture and 200-year-old Spanish, Mexican-influenced furniture as well. It's a very eclectic space in that sense, because our mission has really been to put together estate collections on consignment along with the work that we do as we collect in the community. And showcasing those things has really meant staging all these diverse collections in a way that feels aesthetically cohesive. You would see folk art chairs and sculptures by William Holtzman, who was a fixture in the folk art world 50 years ago. You'd see his work. You'd see paintings by Geoff Pocock and Indiana Nelson. And I want to tell you a little bit more about the stories behind those as well. But yeah, I think what you'd find is just a really exciting, eclectic, well-curated space.
It also has super tall ceilings and incredible natural light in the daytime. It's also has lovely mood lighting at night. And I would say is overall has a very whimsical feel. It's just a real feast for the eyes too.
When I think about why I collect or want to share collections and objects with other people, I think as an artist, I don't know many artists who aren't themselves collectors. I think it's partly how we get our inspiration. And I think artists, as Picasso once said, are liars who tell the truth. I mean, we spend a lot of time collecting information, visual and otherwise. And I think that pastiche or collage effect in our own cognitive process also leads us to hold on to things that we draw that kind of inspiration from. So oftentimes objects are that kind of point of departure. So as a collector for a long time, that's what I was really drawn to. And I work with a number of other collectors who bring their goods in. And then in the last year during COVID, we had requests from a number of different families who wanted to find a way to share their family's art, the work of a loved one who had passed away, along with objects that related to that artist's life, and find an opportunity to showcase that work, to exhibit it to a new audience, and to really share artist stories about those who had passed. The whimsy, I think, comes from the eclecticism. When you have so many different perspectives on what is aesthetically pleasing, what has value, what turns them on, and bringing them into a space like this just requires me to have a very broad view, right? So instead of sticking with a genre or period, it's really about trying to make all these things feel like they're part of an exhibit, right? So I've taken some of my exhibit practice in the past and really applied it to that.
You mentioned estates, and I frequently attend estate sales, as you know, because we have gone to estate sales together.
Yes, we have. and fairs, antique fairs and things like that as well. Yeah.
I think estate sales are especially weird, right? Because often you go to this house and kind of are rummaging through this person or people's things. I took a friend who had never been to an estate sale recently, and she just was like, wow, I couldn't stop thinking about my mother and how would she feel if strangers were rummaging through her stuff, you know, to buy things off of her, whether, you know, they're correctly priced or not, right? Like, it's kind of like vultures coming down and just, you know, cannibalizing somebody's estate, and, you know, everything just goes to the winds.
You said kind of like, it's exactly what it is. don't you feel like you're a vulture picking bones? So yes, right? Some of that's inevitable when a family is left with someone who has passed and don't see any other option in terms of how to how to lift the burden of being responsible for many of these things. And so, interestingly, we feature a number of artists' work. Those artists have passed away. The families inherited their parents' work and found themselves in the same kind of position. Like, well, do I just do an estate sale? That felt a little odd. These are artists who had leading careers in large markets while they were alive. It seems really inappropriate on some level to try to sell their work in that setting, right? And so in talking to them, we found that there was this strange niche of families who had inherited things of their parents, had believed in their parents' work, and their parents had been successful once upon a time, and wanted to find a venue for being able to re-exhibit, right? And I think also part of that goes to, these are people who had held on to their parents' work because they weren't really ready to let go of it, and they certainly weren't willing to put it at an estate sale for garage sale prices, right? I think where we fit in that sense, we certainly go to estate sales and garage sales and antique markets and all sorts of ways of collecting items. And there are stories behind the reason why somebody might have had something. But when you go to those kinds of sales, you don't get the story behind it. And so we had families that came to us, had met us through other contexts or had placed an ad in Craigslist and then shared with us that they're really uncomfortable doing Craigslist, especially during COVID. They were tired of trying to retell the story every time somebody showed up or haggling about prices or having their privacy invaded. We really took it upon ourselves then to kind of make that a feature. So we have three different collections right now in which we can tell the stories of the artists, of their families, where they came from, why it's important to them, and try to offer it both to a local market, and we'll be selling things online as well.
You know, just to illustrate something that you just described, the last estate sale that I went to, I picked up a really beautiful hand-painted fabric with a scene on it, and there was a little scrap of paper pinned to it that said, Peggy painted this by hand on a blanket 20 years ago. So in preparation for this estate sale, I don't know if it was Peggy herself who put these notes in some of the items, but some of the items that she thought were noteworthy, she put these notes on and stuck them on these items, knowing that strangers who had no knowledge of, you know, this woman's story were going to be taking these things away.
If you're a picker like you and I, you get excited when you find those things, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not just the contextualizing of an object. It's the relating to the person who once found it to be special and special enough to want to share what was special about it to them. And so we really feel like we have kind of a responsibility to tell those stories. So let me take this opportunity to segue, right? I'm gonna tell you a couple little quick stories, right? So one person that reached out to us is a gentleman named George Hawk. And some of your listeners on KXA are probably familiar with him because he is a member of the Dusty Chaps and Los Lasers. And so he's been touring for many years. And in the last year, he's been doing some renovation work at his property. And he has a number of Oracle Commune painter pieces in his collection. He also spent time in LA and collected a number of mid-century modern pieces. And also ended up with these folk art pieces that I mentioned earlier. Here he was. He was looking for somebody to help clear out his garage. It was me that answered the call. And when I saw all these other paintings that I was digging out of the garage that were being eaten by pack rats and saw some of this amazing furniture, these steel medical cabinets from the 50s and the William Holtzman folk art pieces and Alfred Kiros and Jim Davis and so on, I said, wow, you've got a lot of really interesting stuff here. Tell me more about how you came to collect this work. And so he shared his story of what attracted him and how he came to be kind of a collector in these different fields, from local Tucson artists to mid-century modern furniture. And so we helped him clean out his garage. We brought some pieces over to Templeton's. And then I subsequently hung a lot of artwork in his space and developed a relationship with him and his partner, Charlotte. Another artist, Indiana Nelson, was an established New York artist who studied in Italy, working with Jamie Wyeth back in the day, painting murals in nightclubs in New York, and then doing abstract art. She eventually came back to her roots in Arizona. She was born originally in Nogales. She had written two books, two novels that were well received, and hitchhiking in Arizona, of all things, she was picked up by a woman named Esther Leon, who is a seventh generation Arizonan. And Indiana was so inspired by her friendship with Esther that she created a whole series of paintings of Esther and her family. These were not abstracts. They were the first portraits that she had ever painted. And we have four of them of Esther and her family. Indiana was featured in the Sunday, November 21st, 1982 edition of the Arizona Daily Star in the lifestyle section for this body of work. And we're lucky to have four of those paintings. And so these are people who were members of the Tucson community, making art about fellow Tucsonans, and to be able to invite others to hear their stories and see their work is just an honor, right?
You know, I think it's really interesting that you find these collections important and want to, in a way, kind of rescue them and elevate them, rescue them from the garage sale status and elevate them to something that's more curated and I'm not even going to say respectful, but it's absolutely more celebratory of these people's lives and their work. Not everybody takes the time to do that or is interested or is going to see things that way. So tell us about your artistic route, right? Why are you such a collector and a curator?
So both my parents were artists. I grew up in artist studios and communes as a kid. There were a number of artists, including my parents, whose work I really loved and respected. Today, many of them are forgotten. And I think many of these people were pre-internet artists, right? So unless somebody decided that they were going to put this information online, you might not even have ever heard of them a generation or two later. And yet, in their day, they were professors of fine arts. They had exhibits at leading galleries in New York City like Monique Knowlton. They maybe had been in a Whitney Biennial, right? So once upon a time, they were significant and important as artists. We take that for granted, right? So we know who Picasso and Matisse are because there were people who wanted to continue to tell their stories. And often that's market driven. Well, these are artists for whom the market changed for one reason or another. And there was no reason for anybody to continue to tell their story. So I think that's a big part of it for me.
Young people growing up in this internet world, it's like, well, obviously, if it exists, there's some record of it online, right? I mean, you know, I think that we don't even consider that somebody could have had a very fruitful artistic career and there might be no trace of them on the internet, but you're totally right. And I wanted to actually follow this up with a question, kind of a, you know, philosophical one. This time of COVID, where so many people are passing on, right? And we're, you know, losing their stories and, you know, maybe even their estates are being auctioned. Did this context that we're living in any way kind of set a fire under you to continue this mission of reclaiming these stories and documenting them?
100%. So during this time, I've actually known a number of artists who have passed. And a number of artists during this period who realized that they needed to pivot away from the kind of exhibit work that they had done up to that point and find new venues, new opportunities, and new platforms along with new markets, right? So I've known a lot of artists who have been doing the scramble to switch, to make the pivot. People expect that if it happened, it's on the internet, and that's just not true, right? Somebody has to do the legwork to put that information in, have it be searchable, have you find it. It's not a small thing. It's not trivial, right? That actually requires, for most people, there's a whole profession that's associated with that. And if they're not in that profession, they're not going to have the tools or resources or the knowledge base to be able to do that for themselves. Yes, in part, realizing that was happening in my own work, it helped crystallize for me the idea of having a mission associated with what I do. So rather than just, okay, I've got interesting stuff that I want to provide to you that you can buy if you're interested, but mostly so that you can kind of appreciate and experience these things from a curated perspective. When my mother passed away, the fact of the matter is there's nothing online. Here was a woman who went to school with Waters at the Maryland Art Institute and had been very successful in her own lifetime, but she was pre-internet, had never done anything with the internet. And so there's nothing available about her or her work. Even though I have probably 10 portfolios of slides. Remember back in the day when artists had to take slides of their work to share? And so none of that is of any value, right? In the sense of trying to tell the story. So, and a real good case in point, somebody who's bridged that gap fairly successfully before he passed away, but for whom today, again, you might find something here or there, Geoff Pocock. His name is spelled G-E-O-F-F Pocock, was an artist whose career spans 50, 60 years. He read poetry with Ginsberg, with Equal Billing. He attended the New York School of Visual Arts. He was born in Southern England, but in 79, he completed a project called 640 square foot environmental performance sculpture in Monument Valley, Utah. I think there's some documentary evidence of that. I couldn't find it online. He had a full career. He ended up in LA in his last years, did a split residence with Ventura, California, their arts community, the Working Artist Ventura community, the Wave Space in LA. And his daughter lives here in Tucson. And she ended up with a lot of his paintings in her storage. And I was lucky enough to see some of those in her home and kind of rummage through the storage. And when I had an opportunity to have a space like this, she was one of the first people I thought of and said, you know, I would love to have his work on the walls rather than in your storage unit. Let's bring his work back out. And so he's a good example of somebody who did, in no small part due to his daughter's efforts to get him kind of digitized and 21st century in that market sense.
Jeremy, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ava.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to the full-length podcast, visit kxci.org. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. Support for Artist Stories is provided by Benjamin Supply, presenting a full spectrum of hardware and plumbing fixtures for kitchen and bath, and their gallery Tucson, offering national and local art in both the Tucson Warehouse and Transfer Buildings on 6th Street and 7th Avenue. With products available at will call, they are currently open by phone at 777-7000 and at benjaminsupply.com or gallerytucson.com. All right.